You're listening to the Manic Pixie Weirdo. I'm Abigail, your host. And today we are joined with Brett from the Tell Me About It podcast. Say hi.
Hey, how you doing? How you doing, Manic Pixie Weirdo family?
We're okay.
Awesome.
How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much. We just got done finished recording. So sorry about my, sorry about that.
Fine. It's fine. You're fine. It's all good. It's all good. Yeah. We don't care. We're pretty chill. So this is the relationship where we talk about all the different kinds of relationships that we have in our lives. And so this week, we're going to talk about the relationship that Brett has with the specific case of Marvin Scott and how that sort of relates to the larger BLM movement. Mm-hmm. And like sort of, you know, talk about it in broader terms as well. So for those of you that don't know anything about the Marvin Scott case, I actually heard about it on Brett's podcast, the Tell Him About It podcast. And he had mentioned that it was in Collin County, and that's where I live. I live in Collin County. Now, Collin County is huge. It's huge. And it is one of the richest counties in Texas. I have had firsthand experience with the Collin County Police Department and the jail system. And let me tell you, it's not great. Okay. Wow. Everybody's corrupt. I had a judge in front of me while I was dealing with some legal stuff. That's another episode for another time. But I had a judge in front of me very casually and offhandedly say, like before we started doing anything, he was like upset that he had to sell like his Corvette and he could only keep the Beamer or something. It was something like that. And then he was like, and I just wrote a check for $80,000 for my son's first semester of college. And I was like, so you're clearly on the take. Like that's you're doing. Right. We're doing this. Like we're doing this. Okay. You're just very open and casual about it. Awesome. Cool. Great. So like that's the energy that the police department has in Collin County. Okay.
Wow.
So Marvin Scott, he was a kid, and I say kid because he was 25, and that's your brain
very young.
Is fully developed at the age of 25. And it's not like you wake up one morning, you know, on your 25th birthday and all of a sudden, like your brain is fully developed. It's something it's not like something magical that happens. It just happens between the ages of 24 and 26. And the average of that is 25. So that's why we say 25. So his brain was like, if anything, it was he was a young adult. Like I've only been a young adult. I'll be 28 this month. So I'll have only been a young adult in my mind for like 3 years. So this guy was barely an adult. And he had been diagnosed with schizophrenia. Now there are at least 5 different types of schizophrenia. I do not know what type he had been diagnosed with. But that's important for the story. He was in some kind of like Dollar General or Target or something. And a police officer said they smelled marijuana on him. So they followed him around the store and then they followed him out to his car and using probable cause. Oh, they also said that he was acting strangely in the store. So that was another reason why they followed him. And so they followed him back to his car. They used probable cause to search his car and they found less than 2 grams of weed on him. That is a very small amount for those of you that don't know and have no idea.
Extremely small.
Yeah. It's a very, very, very small amount of pot. Okay. It's like $20 worth. So whatever, you know, So because he was acting strangely, and this is the part where I'm going to start to get very like excited and jittery, because this is the part that really is not okay with me. This is where it starts to become really not okay with me. So because he was acting strangely, they said that they were going to take him to the hospital first. Now, in my mind, if your first stop while arresting somebody has to be the hospital, they should not be released back into police custody, period. End of story. because that's a problem right there. But so they took him to the hospital. He was honest with the hospital staff and he told them, you know, I was diagnosed with schizophrenia 2 years ago. I am on medication and sometimes I use weed because it helps sometimes. Now, there are studies for both sides. There are studies where marijuana doesn't help and there are studies that show that it does. That to me just tells me that it's very individualized and it's entirely possible that he was somebody that marijuana actually helped. So I'm going to take his word for it. Mm-hmm. They released him back into police custody. They discharged him, released him into police custody where he was taken to jail and they said that he continued acting strangely. So they decide to restrain him. They put him in a restraining chair. He continued to act strangely because he's tied to a fucking chair. And so they pepper sprayed him, spit gagged him. I don't even know what that is. Do not send me pictures. Do not explain it to me. It's using context clues. It's horrifying enough. Mm-hmm. So they pepper sprayed him. They put a spit hood on him and then they transferred him from the restraining chair to a restraining bed and then left him there. He was found 11 minutes later dead of asphyxiation. Mm. So that's the case that we're here to talk about. And it really struck home for me because it literally struck home. And I'm currently at a hotel that is like, you know, a mile away from the jail. And there are protests going on and it's like, I can't. So we need to talk about this.
Right.
And thank you for bringing it to my attention.
Of course.
So, go ahead. No, go ahead.
See, what we like to do at Talking About a Podcast, we like to bring to light some of the cases that maybe aren't mainstream, maybe some of the ones you won't see on CNN. When this one came across the table, when somebody sent this to us, we automatically seen this was like, this is something we have to talk about because yes, there's so many cases. There's so many things that happen all of the time. This is something that happens every day in Black communities and communities around the world, where something so small could turn into something so big. You know what I mean? Like you said, less than 2 ounces, like less than 2 grams. Like that's insane to me to actually feel like you have to take that to the next level. I have to arrest you. You know what I'm saying? Like that's nothing on the grand scheme of things. I read that, you know, yes, he suffered from schizophrenia. They've dealt with him a few times and the times that they dealt with him, they knew what to do with him, but this time they decided to handle it, you know,
that's
totally
really
different.
I didn't read that. That's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, so
that's interesting to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting to me for a couple of reasons, because I had the same thing happen. Mm-hmm. The police had dealt with me. I was in the middle of having a panic attack. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when I have panic attacks, like the police do need to be called because I need to be taken to the emergency room to be like given medication kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And that's what they did. And then all of a sudden, like one night, it was just another night. And where the last time was that they had taken me to the psych hospital, like they should have done. Mm-hmm. And then the next time they like arrested me for assault on my husband. And my husband was like, no, you told me you were taking her to the hospital. Mm-hmm. So it's not an uncommon practice here either. I know that for a fact. So just to keep everybody in context, like this is not an unheard of thing that would happen.
Right. And see, you know, not trying to take anything away from you. See, you were able to make it out alive.
Yeah.
When they take us into there, it turns into a whole different thing.
Oh yeah.
You know, now, you know, however he was acting, we don't know. They felt like they had to take things to a different level, pepper spray him, put a spit hood like that. Like you said, don't even send me anything to even talk about what that is. I've never heard of this. This is something different. Yeah. You know, a spit hood put on somebody's head and then he's found, you know, later dead. Like as his family, I wouldn't know how to react to something like that. Cause that's just a little, that's way out there above the norm of what we've ever seen. But that just shows you had no care of what his situation was. You guys didn't care.
And I mean, listen, so his family, and I thought his mother did a really good job in this one interview that I watched, because she was very clear about like the questions that she wanted answers. And let me just say this, they weren't like hard hitting deep questions. They were like, did the police officers have mental health care training? Like simple mm-hmm. stuff like that. Like these are right. not hard questions. These should not be hard questions to answer. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that she said. She was like, did they know that it was entirely possible he was in the middle of a mental break? Like mm-hmm. what did you have healthcare training? Also, why was the hospital allowed to release you without us knowing?
Right.
Like, why was he not released into our care?
These are things that they like the police officers. Yes, they may go through these training sessions or whatever to try to further the conversation. But like, so my wife, her job, they try to have these meetings where they're inclusive, all inclusive, and they want to talk about these things that go on in the world. But there is only a certain number of people that will even join those conversations or even join those meetings because the other half of them say, I shouldn't have to be here. I don't really care that much. So you got to think about it. When they're sitting in these meetings, most of the times they're sitting in there cracking jokes, not even caring about what they're watching on the screen. You know what I'm saying? So when it happens to you in real life, because you didn't really take your training seriously, now we have these kind of situations happening. You don't know how to react to these situations. When they try to teach you in these situations, but you just thought it was a joke and it was something funny, it doesn't mean anything to you. Black lives right. don't really mean anything to what your grand scheme of things are. And that's kind of the thing we try to highlight on our podcast is that, you know, I know a lot of people have an issue with the Black Lives Matter movement, which they shouldn't, because we're not trying to say other lives don't matter. We're just saying, like, right now, we're the lives that are being taken under, you know, ridiculous things, under things that don't, like, a simple traffic stop shouldn't matter. A couple of grams of weed should not matter, should not be a reason to take someone's life. But you take it into your jurisdiction because I'm a cop. This is what I can do. I'm going to take your life. And it's just like, those are the things that we want to get out here and have people understand that this shouldn't be right. This shouldn't be okay. This shouldn't be a practice that none of these cops should practice. Nobody's life should be taken for something so simple. We've seen people go in a grocery store and kill a whole bunch of people and they walk out alive.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like me, I did. I walked out alive.
You know what I'm saying? Or kill a bunch of people in a church and they go get you Burger King.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. Or what's going on with the FedEx stuff? Like all this stuff, like that gentleman killed himself, but all this stuff goes on and we're willing to take this person alive, but we're going to kill this person simply because he had a counterfeit $20 bill in the case of George Floyd.
Oh, you know what I thought mean? It
like,
was
like crazy things like that.
For some reason, somebody told me that it was like cigarettes or something.
It was cigarettes and counterfeit money or whatever the case may be.
So you're telling me the cost? No.
Scheme of things.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. No. For right. sure, it's 100%. Mm-hmm. Like you didn't have something better to do that day. There wasn't right, like a murderer or mm-hmm. you know.
That's what you felt like somebody's life needed to end on.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
and that's the things that.
Well, but nobody gets anywhere because the cop's gonna have a horrible day. I mean, he's alive, mm-hmm. you know, but mm-hmm. the cop, like, you just ruined everybody's day because you wouldn't. Like you just chose to not have anything better to do.
Right. And then you cause a lot of harm to African Americans because like right now we're going through the George Floyd case. And then we go through what happened with the Dante Wright stuff out of Minnesota. And we're still, you know, we never get a chance to like breathe after something like this happens because something happens next and something happens next. The next thing just keeps popping up and popping up. So we never get to have a chance to just kind of, I'm not going to say get over what happened, but kind of just let that resonate with us for a little while because something else pops up and it's always something. And then, you know, you look at Twitter, somebody will try to bring whatever this person did in their early years of their life. We're mm-hmm. going to bring up those things. We're going to make it seem like this person was a bad guy, but we're not going to bring up the fact this person was a father. This person was an uncle. This person was a brother. This person was a son to someone. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So whatever faults you think he had, you know, on the grand scheme of things, he did not deserve to die over what happened, over what that situation was. Small situations. But I'll just take it to something that's happened to me in the neighborhood that we live in here in Georgia. We live in a very much so, yes, it's a red state. And of course, it turned blue from the past election. But when I was a little younger, my brother, we moved here and my brother gave me his car. He's from California. He gave me his car and it had California license plates. And I was getting the license plates. Yeah, I was getting the license plates changed, just waiting for the plates to come. My older brother, he needed to be dropped off at work. Mm-hmm. I had myself, my older brother, and my younger brother at the time was probably like 8 or 9 years old. Of course, we got pulled over for the plates, and I had all my paperwork and everything that needed to be shown to show that, hey, everything's okay.
Right.
No, he made me pull into the parking lot where my brother worked because he saw my brother's name badge. So he saw his shirt. He made me pull into the parking lot where my brother worked. He made all of us get out of the car, and he wanted the ID of my brother, who was 9 at the time, who doesn't have an ID because he's 9. So you're trying to embarrass my brother in front of his job. You know what I'm saying? You're trying to embarrass me in front of all these people that are in the parking lot, as well as make a scene because this young man is 9 years old at the time. He does not have an ID. Why are you going through all of this to try to, you know, prove your point or whatever the case may be in that situation? These are the things that we go through as Black men, as Black people, because I will tell you, I'm fearful to drive past a cop, even if I'm following the rules. I don't know if that man had a bad day that day. I don't know if he had a bad day at home. He's allowed to bring his bad day to work and then take it out in whatever case he may want to take it out on. And then we have these situations and we just turn to either a hashtag or a T-shirt. And that's not what we want.
Right.
We want real police reform. Yeah. Real change. Yeah. So it just gets really tough when you come to these situations because, you know, we're out here trying to be peaceful, trying to protest, trying to make sure they want to highlight the riots. They want to highlight the bad things that happen. But there are peaceful things going on. But what else do we do when you're not listening to the peacefulness? You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's kind of where I think we're at now, because it's very frustrating. And I had to go down the rabbit hole of, okay, what is this deal? Why is everybody mad at Black Lives Matter? Mm-hmm. So I had to follow it down the rabbit hole. And as I was following it down the rabbit hole, it occurred to me that maybe white people, I'm looking at us, we're jealous because we can't get our shit together. This is something that is, it's not exclusive to the Black culture. Mm-hmm. But it is something that y'all have that we don't.
Mm-hmm.
And y'all have that courage. Y'all have that fire. Y'all have that fight in you. And y'all are willing to be like vocal about your needs and what you want to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It is very much ingrained in white culture to take it on the chin. It's your fault. You did this to yourself. What was your part in this situation? What did you do wrong? And to blame the victim rather than to be like, no, this is bullshit. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And so
I feel like there is fear there. There is fear because it's really hard to do. It's really hard to do that. It's really hard. But I'm just looking at everything and I'm going, all right, so it's not going great for people in the socioeconomic class that would be considered like lower middle class and below, like poor. Even what's left of the middle class. It's getting farther and farther to the point where we're like, you're either rich or you're not.
Rich or poor. Yep.
Rich or you're not. Mm-hmm. And as far as the socioeconomic class that we are currently a part of, it's not going great for white people. It doesn't seem to be going great for you guys. It doesn't seem to be going great for Asians of this, like of this specific socioeconomic class. If you reside in this class, it's not going great for any of us. But we need to have the courage, white people, to go, hey, we're not the enemy. We don't hate you guys. We just didn't realize that what you're doing was an option. We were never told that it's okay to stand up and say, this is bullshit and you need to fix it. To hold people accountable. And I think that that is something that Black culture has that I'm just going to say it is better than how we have white than what it is in white culture. So, I mean, I don't know. Do you think there's anything to that? Am I making shit up? Do you think there's anything to that? I don't know.
See, our whole life, especially being African-American, we've had to we've been taught from the jump that nothing's going to be given to you. You're going to have to do 20 times more than the white person in front of you or whoever, whatever race in front
right,
of you, just to
right.
get where you want to be. I'm not going to just keep it to white people, but Asians, whoever.
Yeah, but
you're
going
to have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you're going to have to do 20 times more than they do in order to just get a little bit of what they get. You know what I'm saying? Just right. to even have your name in the hat, you're going to have to do 20 times more. And when it comes to situations with the police, that conversation gets taught early. My mom taught me from the very jump, hey, when you're dealing with police, this is how you act. This is what you say. This is what you do. These are not conversations that white people have to have.
Right. Can I ask?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know how one would begin to have that conversation with a child. Like, what do you say?
See, my mom just had to have it. Where we grew up, Riverdale, Georgia, right? Very African-American affluent community. That's what's there. Before I moved to the community that I'm in now, I probably only knew or was friends with maybe 3 or 4 white people before I even got to the community, because my mom got remarried and we moved to a different area where the gentleman lived. And that was my first interaction with white people, like to that grand scheme of things. But the people mm-hmm. that I grew up around, if they were white, they acted black.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
I'm just going to put that out there. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Because that's the community that they grew
right.
up in.
Right.
So I didn't really understand the country and the this and the that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But, my mom had to have all the cops in the community were not African American. They were white cops. So sometimes I would have to walk to school. I'd have to walk home from school. Me and my friends would go eat at a certain restaurant or go eat at a certain fast food joint. And we would just be picked on because it's 5 or 6 black kids just standing out here dressed a certain way. They didn't feel like the right things were going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So my mom had to have that conversation with us and say, hey, when they approach you, this is how you act. This is how you're supposed to be. This is what you do. And even in these cases that happened to a Philando Castile or that happened to a Dante Wright or any other names that I could bring up, they were not being belligerent towards the cops. You
right.
know, we could teach that 100 times.
Right.
George Floyd was not being belligerent towards the cop. We could teach that 100 times, but at the end of the day, it's that cop. He's going to do whatever he wants to do because he has the authority at that point.
Right.
So, yes, you can teach these lessons, but at the end of the day, that cop's going to do whatever he wants to do.
Yeah.
And these are the kind of things that we're trying to get changed, because I think that you need to have the people policing these communities that come from these communities or that understand these communities, because if I knew Marvin Scott, I'm from this community, I understand that maybe he may act a certain way because maybe,
right.
yes, I know he's diagnosed with schizophrenia. So I know maybe if he didn't do X, Y, and Z, I'm not trying to be offensive to the family or anything, but if he's doing X, Y, and Z, I know how to handle him. It's not, I need to arrest him. It's not, I need to,
right.
to restrain him. It's not, I need to do X, Y. I just need to make sure that I handle him like this so that I can get him home to his family because they know what to do going forward. And that's
yeah.
not what happens
yeah.
in African-American community, because in African-American community, there's so many different people. There's so many different aspects of people. You have that uncle that may do X, Y, Z. You have that aunt that may
right.
do this. They don't mean any harm.
Right.
But to this cop
right.
that doesn't know the neighborhood, he
yeah.
may feel like, oh, now I'm afraid of this woman. I'm afraid of this man. I don't know what they're going to do. But this woman is the most gentle woman on the planet. But you don't understand, because maybe today she didn't take that pill.
Yeah.
Or maybe today, you know, she had a bad day. But everybody in the neighborhood understands that this lady is just who she is.
Yeah.
And we understand how to deal with her. And once she calms down, she's going to be fine. But you
yeah.
just take it upon yourself and do what you need to do. So it's all just like it's a hard conversation. It's a hard pill to swallow. I have to have these own conversations with my daughters. You know what I'm saying? I have two
yeah.
daughters, and I have to have these conversations. They're young, and they see us watching the news, and they see these cases on TV. Daddy, what happened? Why did he die? Like, it's a shame that my daughter at 6 years old has to learn about death. Has to learn about black people dying. I have to teach her these things at 6 years old. You know what I mean? Six
yeah.
years old, I have to teach you about death and what they do to African Americans and how you need to govern yourself so that it doesn't happen to you.
Yeah.
People should see that as a problem and not try to find a reason to say, oh, nah, it was this. Oh, nah, it's that. If you were to do this, if you were to do that, this would happen to you. No, it doesn't matter. Because
yeah.
in all these cases, it shows, regardless of what you do, regardless of who you are, they're going to do what they want to do at the end of the day. The gentleman who was in the army uniform, he's a military vet.
That was I
working.
Couldn't watch it. It was too
right. I didn't watch it either.
Couldn't do it.
You did what you did, but you condemn Colin Kaepernick for kneeling because of the military. But this is what you decide to do.
Yeah.
So what's your fight here?
Well, no, but that's why it's bigger. That's why for me, it's bigger than just that. It's bigger than, because now you're not talking about, there's no respect for the military there, which means that that was a lie that we were told.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
always has been.
Right. Right. And not that it ever was. It was just, you know, that was a lie that we as a culture, the white culture, bought into. We bought into this. Turns out, no, lie. You know, and we could just go down the list of lies that we were told, you know, that we are told to believe.
Right.
And like those, that would be, I would consider like those rules and those things that you do. Those are taught to us in the same way that you're having like life or death conversations with your, with your kids. And that's not okay. That's not okay. Well,
I fear for my brothers. I fear for my cousins. I fear for my mom. I fear for anybody in my family that lives in a predominantly African-American community. And has to be policed by people that are not from your community. Because you never know what can happen. You never know on a day-to-day basis, you know, just driving down the street, just doing what you do on an everyday basis. I'm just driving to work. This gentleman could have had a bad day at home. He's allowed to bring his bad day at home to work, and he takes it out on you. Mm-hmm. And it could be, you know, in the case of Dwayne Wright, Dante Wright, I'm sorry. In the case of Dante Wright, you know, the sheriff goes on there and says it was an accident. You don't accidentally kill someone. You know what I mean? Because if
could I you imagine, someone, I was going to say, could you imagine? Right? You know? Could you imagine if a doctor accidentally killed one of his patients?
Yeah,
he would be fired so fast. Lawsuit absolutely. Immediately. I mean,
if I accidentally pulled my gun on, I accidentally shot him, man. I didn't mean to do that. My fault, man. Hey, I didn't mean to do. He's dead. You know?
Right.
Oh my God, you're going to jail.
But every gangbanger would have had a get out of jail free card. Right, they didn't know it.
I didn't know what I was doing, you know?
Yeah.
Anybody who's ever killed someone would have a get out of jail free card because I did it on an accident.
Right.
You know, we're allowed to say that here. The cops are the only people that are allowed to say I killed someone on an accident. Right. I didn't know what side the taser was on, but it's kept on different sides. Like, what? You know what I'm saying? Like, these are the type of things that we allow cops to get away with. That we don't allow any other person in society to get away with. It's only this cult of police officers that are allowed to do this and get away with it. People running away from them. You felt scared while they were running away, so you shot them in the back.
Right.
Like, how does that even make sense?
Right. Well, I mean, it's kind of, so for all of you out there, hold on, I'm going to find it really quickly. But there is a podcast called Behind the Police. It has Prop Hip Hop and I forget Richard something or other. And they talk about like the founding of the police department, and it came out right around the time of like all the protesting and stuff. And as it turns out, policing in this country was started by the rich to protect the rich, because you need some sort of militant force to protect your home so that the peasants don't storm the castle. And it was rooted in racism because they needed these guys. It like basically blossomed out of people who used to be slave chasers. I don't know if the same badge
that they use is the badge that they would use when they were trying to find runaway slaves.
Yeah.
And hang them and all the stuff that they would do. So it's, you know, the badge that they use is the exact same badge, especially when we found out we were free, you know, the things that they would do and the badge that they would use to enforce certain things on black people. It's the same badge they use today.
Yeah.
So it's just like, you know, we haven't changed.
No, it hasn't changed. Yeah. Well, because it started rooted in, you know, A, oppressing the poor as much as possible, and B, also we need you can't be poor if you have no money, but there needs to be a way to keep, you know,
you here.
Yeah.
We never want you to be at this level. We always want you to be here. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And
we want you to fear us.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Well, because ruling by fear is much easier than ruling with like hope and honesty mm-hmm. and, you know, kindness and compassion and empathy.
Sure.
Which tells me, the bigger picture there tells me, I highly recommend the podcast, guys. Go listen to that podcast. You'll learn a lot. I'm learning. I'm not finished with it yet because it's like a little series or whatever, but it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
But what that tells me is that it's all diseased. Like it's mm-hmm. all diseased, which means we need to scrap the segment and start over. Mm-hmm. We either need to scrap the segment and start over, which, guys, is that would be really bloody. That would be really, really hard. And it would require a lot. And I kind of don't want to do that, guys.
Imagine trying to get a bunch of right wing people to agree that the police were wrong. These black, like we said, Black Lives Matter. They came out with Back yeah. to Blue.
Right.
You know, to combat that, like, oh, right. because we're saying our lives matter, you decided to say, oh, blue lives matter. A blue life is not a real life. I could say you take that badge off, you take that uniform off.
Right.
I can't take black off. And right. right now, if you look, black lives are the ones that are in jeopardy, the ones that are yeah. in danger. So how could you possibly bring up blue lives matter? That's why I told you I appreciate what you're doing, because on your platform and who you are, you're trying to learn, you're trying to figure out what I can do to help.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, what I need to do to be a detriment to this. What can I do to help? What do I need? What do you need from me?
Yeah.
I'm not going to go out here and just say these blanket statements just to put something out there.
No.
I'm genuinely trying to help. And I want to hear from an African-American, a black yeah. person to figure out what I can do. And that's important. But that's very important that you just, you know, there are a lot of, white people that just put out blanket statements just to try to clout chase. You're not there for that. And that's why I told you that I appreciate what you do, because even bringing me on here, you know, I don't know what your base is or what your listener base is, but this could be something totally different that they never heard.
I don't know. I don't really look at that. Yeah. I don't really look at that. I don't care. I just, it's, I want this to be an inclusive podcast. Like we're not, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I don't even care if you listen because you're like, hate listening, like by all means, it's entertainment.
Right.
But hopefully exactly. you might learn something, you know, that's mm-hmm. the idea, is to mm-hmm. spread this idea of mm-hmm. we all need to work together, because guys, it's not working out for anybody. And as it turns out, it's not working out for the only people it's working out for are the rich. They're the only people happy.
If
they're
you're
the
up here.
Only, yeah. They're the only right. people happy.
The 1%.
Yeah. And if we can start working together, we might actually be able to get something fixed and something mm-hmm. done. If this is the system that we all collectively decide that we truly want to live in. I don't really like mm-hmm. this system, but I don't mm-hmm. really get a say in that either. So
right. how do you see somebody die on camera and say, well, they could have done this? How do you possibly see somebody die without a gun, without a weapon, without charging at somebody, without being aggressive? How can you possibly see that happen and say, well, if they would have done that, how could you possibly see that and say something like that?
Well, I think it's got a lot to do with the fact that we've been desensitized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we see violent, we're like sex
every,
is this huge
TV.
Everything. I mean, sex is considered like taboo. You can't even like, you know, show nipples through a shirt, but you can mm-hmm. watch somebody like mutilate a corpse and I mean, you can anything you can imagine violently, you can watch, mm-hmm. you can watch. And I think that's another problem with like just media in general, is because we have gotten desensitized to this. So it doesn't feel real. It feels like, no, that doesn't happen over here. That happens mm-hmm. to somebody else over there mm-hmm. across the United States is a big place. So it's somebody mm-hmm. over there, that's somebody we don't know. And oh my God, it's so hard and it's so sad for that family. But that's why we live here, because it doesn't happen here. It does.
Happen here. Yeah.
It does.
And it can.
That's their point.
I've lost so many white friends because I've had a conversation with some of my friends and they say, oh, that's not going to happen to you, man. You're different. No, I'm black. And at any moment, they don't know that Brett is a black person.
Right.
Yeah, goes to his job. Comes home to his two daughters, comes home to his family, is a family man, takes care of his kids. This cop doesn't care about that. This cop doesn't know me. This cop doesn't care who I am or what I do or what I mean to my community. On this day, he had a bad day, or on this day, he felt like this is what he wanted to do and he did it. It does not matter to him. So you can't look at me and say, oh, that won't happen to you, man. That's, yeah. You're different. I can comply with all the rules. He says, get out of my car with your hands up. I get out of my hands up. I get on my knees. I put my hands on my back and do everything he tells me to do. But at the end of the day, he just decides to, him and his buddies decide to just beat me to a bloody pulp and I die in their custody. And they say, oh, that's not what happened.
Right.
But I didn't have my camera on at that time. It was broke. And my family has to live with the repercussions of that. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's all scary things. The amount of anxiety that goes to a black person just driving past a cop when you're just heading to work, it's on a whole other level.
I can't even.
Unless you had to see it, unless you had to live through it. You'll never understand the anxiety, the amount of fear that comes to your heart, that comes to your body when you get pulled over for something as simple as a light out or whatever the case may be.
Right.
It's tough. It's extremely tough.
Okay. White people, we need to start thinking about it like this. Okay. So like everybody that you see around you, you probably know at least one black person. Okay. So think of every black person like we're going to call that black person in your life Jeff. Okay. Jeff is black.
You gave them the whitest name.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah,
but his name is Jeff. Think of every cop does not see Jeff. You see Jeff, but treat every black person like you would Jeff. Okay. Mm-hmm. But cops don't see Jeff. They just see another black guy. Okay. Oh, and they think that that's all it is. And but you need to understand, not you, the audience needs to understand this too. So when you're poor, that's a strike against you. And that means if you're not rich. Mm-hmm. So we need to think of it like a punch card. We're guilty of being poor. Now, the only thing worse than being guilty of being poor is being guilty of being black and being guilty of being poor.
Yes.
So, I mean, like, that's what we're working with. Okay. That's what they're talking about when they say Black Lives Matter. They're not fighting just because, like, they're poor. They're fighting because they're guilty of being poor and of being black, which is way worse because they're dying. They're dying by the droves.
Even if you're not poor, I could be rich and black and this can happen to me. I could be poor and black in this world. Right. It's just the fact that I'm black. You're literally looking at a skin color and saying, I don't like it.
Right.
That's
it's because we just decided that you weren't our favorite color of human. It was.
We've been told in our lives that, like, we look at slavery, we look at Jim Crow era,
We really don't, not in school.
Like it's so long ago. We make the pictures black and white, but my granddaddy is 70 years old or going into his 80s, right? He lived through all of that. You know what I mean? So whatever his thoughts are against white people, those are going to be his thoughts because what he lived through growing up.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like we make the paint the picture that this was so long ago, but it wasn't so long ago. And a lot of these people that are in these branches of government, a lot of these people that are in positions of power in your neighborhood, in positions of power in your government, in your city, they lived through that too.
Right.
And they're white and they still have those same principles. They never lost those principles, the principles that they were raised on. So they still put those things out to make sure that they mess up the black community. It's never going to change unless we do, unless we hold them accountable. And I love what I'm seeing sometimes where I see a white kid whose parents or grandparents feel a certain type of way against black people. But this kid feels another certain type of way against black people because they're in the same community. They play on the same basketball team, play on the same baseball team. They go to sleepovers with black people. They do all this stuff.
Right.
What you painted them to be, that's not who they are. Because I've actually learned for myself, that's not who this person is. You need to learn who they really are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's appreciated. I know it's not happening everywhere, but it is happening in certain communities.
I'm trying.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm trying. Right.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I take nothing away from you. You're trying. You're learning. You know, you're not raised around that type of stuff. You weren't raised around this type of stuff, but you see it in your own county. And when it hits close to home, then it's like, whoa. You know, when you see
because all of a sudden it's not over there anymore. It's not somewhere.
It's not just something I've seen on TV.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. This is in my own community. This could be somebody I know.
Yeah.
This could be somebody I went to the movies with just yesterday. I had dinner with. Mm-hmm. This could be him. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when it hits you like that, and when you understand it on that grand scheme of things, you're like, wow. okay, let me look at it differently. You know, yeah. let me see this differently. You know, because well, it could be him tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think that there was an element of like, it was very sort of neo-lib of me. Mm-hmm. I've become more of an extremist since life happened. But right. So I always kind of had that neoliberal look at things of where it's like, oh yeah, no, that just happens over there. And oh my God, it's so sad for those people. But once I started growing up and it started happening to me, I was very, and saw it not just happening to me, but living through it with other people.
Mm-hmm.
That was when I was like, okay, well, they have a point. Like they've got, they're making some decent points, guys. Come on, let's listen to hear what you've got to say, but I just feel like we're so divided. How do we come together? Because we are stronger together. Imagine what would happen if everybody who was considered poor and just everybody came together and then we marched.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine the possibilities. And I'm trying
affect the money. One thing I want white people to stop doing is saying, well, I have black friends. Okay. And that would never, they've never done that. They, my black friends, that's, you know, yeah, you got black friends. I get it. I got white friends.
Right.
You know? But you know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't matter that you have black friends or that you have white friends. Something can happen to them and something serious could go on with that black friend that you have that you never thought could happen. And then it'll change your whole opinion on things. You should think of what's happening to the person that you see on CNN, just like that black friend that you have at home that you love so much, and understand that. What if that was your friend? What if that was the person that you hang out? What if that was them? What would you do then? How would you feel? So don't just take it as a personal TV, as a personal Twitter or something I seen, I scroll past.
Yeah.
Understand that this is real life for somebody. That's somebody's daughter. That's somebody's son. That's somebody's grandkid. That's somebody's daddy. That's somebody's mom. Understand that, you know, those people are affected. Mm-hmm. Like you said, like don't normalize those type of things. What we could all do to help, like if we all just, if you don't want to say any, if you don't feel like you feel the same way about it, then don't say anything at all. That's my thing. Just be quiet. Just sit over there and don't say anything. Let the people that are speaking speak. And you don't have to go into the comment boxes and say, oh, but they showed that he had a criminal record when he was 11 years old.
That doesn't justify murder.
No, just because I have a criminal record doesn't mean I need to die. And I'm 27 and I might have changed my life. And I might be doing things differently than what I was doing when I was 11 years old. Like, just be quiet. Don't say anything. Stay back. Right. What's the old term? If I don't have anything nice to say, don't say
anything. Oh, from Bambi. You know what I mean? If you have...
Yeah, don't say anything. Just be quiet. Just stay over there. Have your opinion. Shut up. But if you're gonna, when you start trickling these little, oh, he was this, he was that, it's gonna start the trickle effect. There's the other people coming into the comments saying this and saying that. And it's not even the facts. I seen a dude on Twitter about Dante Wright showing Dante Wright with a gun or whatever, one of his
pictures. Stoplight or something.
He was no. Well, there was just a picture that they posted. The gentleman said, this is what the media shows. And it showed him with his daughter. And they showed what was really Dante Wright was him with his gun. But what Twitter did was show the same gentleman with his bulletproof vest on and all his guns and all this and all that. So what is the difference between you pointing all your guns out on your page and your profile picture and this gentleman doing it? You're so pro guns. Until a black person is holding one, like, what are we doing?
Right. Funnily enough, the man who became the beginning of the end of all of this, the great unraveling, Ronald Reagan, who was very big for gun control. Why? Because the Black Panthers wanted open carry and he was getting a little too uncomfortable.
He was scared. Yeah. right.
I'm like, all for it. Do it. Mm-hmm. I get it. I understand.
Have theirs too. Okay. You know, the Black Panthers, what people don't understand was this organization was not out to do any of the things that they try to make it out to be. They were funding families. They were feeding children that couldn't eat. They were doing all kinds of things in their community to uplift it and just trying to be their own political party in their own right. They got too scared of it. We can't do that. We got to stop.
Well, they were militant too. I thought they were militant, which I get. And I mean, honestly, when you're a kid, I saw this. I was like, yeah, that's true. When you're a kid, Martin Luther King Jr., the way peaceful protests, that makes more sense. You're like, yeah, let's just do that. But when you're, as you get older, you begin to realize that Malcolm X was actually onto something. Like he, he actually makes more sense.
Right.
Because he was militant and he was very much like, no, he thought Martin Luther King Jr. and that movement, they were moving too slow. He wanted change now. And I get that. Like it's time. It's been time. Mm-hmm. It's past time. Let's make it happen.
Right. See, when you watch, like, I don't know if your fans are familiar with the movie Judas and the Black Messiah. You know what I'm saying?
Oh my God, yeah, I cried. Started like I got 10 minutes in before I started crying. Exactly. It was a personal best.
And it really, it tells the story pretty much of like Fred Hampton.
Just blatantly
like
set up.
You know, the things they were trying to paint, the picture they were trying to paint of him was not who he was. You know, so just an educated Black man trying to better his community. But we're going to paint him out to be this terrorist and this person. He was bringing off. He had people who were formerly KKK coming into his organization saying, oh, my God, I see what you're doing here.
Yeah.
We could all be together. We're all poor. They don't care about any of us.
Well, that's why he had to go. Together.
So yeah. I have to get rid of him because you're too positive. So we had to get rid of Malcolm X. So I had to get rid of Martin Luther King.
I mean, just pick somebody. Right. Like they're all dead because it's too threatening. You're threatening. Right. They threaten the status quo. Not only do they threaten the status quo, but I feel like rich people believe it to be, or basically anybody who believes that they're better than anybody else, believes that it is an attack on their lives. So they immediately kick into fight or flight. There's no freeze for them. They immediately kick into fight or flight and they rule with terror. They rule with tyranny.
Right.
And they just have, but because you're Black and those group of people are generally, you know, in a minority community, it's easier for them to shut it down like that and kill all those people. And because they can then scapegoat the entire race. And that's what pits us against each other. And we need to stop with that. We need to take time out and we need to start taking notes because it's not working out for everybody. And they have notes too, and their voices matter because we need them. We need them.
Right. Absolutely. we need them. And, you know, that's why we try to like bring to light these things on our podcast so that I'm not afraid of what could happen. I'm not afraid of if I ever got to that other, if I ever got to that upper echelon type of deal where my podcast is on another level. And people are listening.
You'll
to
get
me.
There.
I'm not afraid of what could happen. You know,
you'll get
because
there.
It takes people like you listening and helping us out. You know, because I'm not afraid of what could happen to us. I just want to better what my daughters come up in, or what my kids and their kids come up in, and what their lives are going to look like 15, 30, 40 years from now when I'm not here. I want to know what.
And
their
isn't that
their
just
lives.
The goal of every parent?
For everyone,
I
yes.
feel like every parent.
That's why shouldn't be a fight.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like we need to stop fighting amongst each other and start listening to each other.
Stop listening to the media.
Yeah, we need to start listening.
Even CNN.
Yeah, nobody.
Don't listen to CNN. Don't listen to Fox. Don't listen to ONN. Don't listen to anybody.
No.
Listen to what
we need to
are
listen.
Telling you.
Yeah, we need to listen to each other.
Right now. And we're just having, we've never met.
Yeah,
you know,
no.
We talk through Twitter. And, you know, we become good friends through Twitter and all this stuff, you know. And we're just listening to each other and letting each other speak and hearing your side, hearing my side. You're listening to mine, listening to you. And we gain a conclusion from that. It doesn't have to be what the man on CNN says or the man on Fox says, because that's just something they're trying to pump into us. Like,
right. Make up our own minds. No, we trust each other. I trust, listen, I trust everybody who's in this boat with us going, something's got to change. I trust everybody in this boat way more than I would ever have thought to even considering trusting anybody who would be rich or above or, you know,
a branch of the government.
Yeah. Any of that, a branch of the government, you name it. I don't trust any of those people. I am willing a lot more to give you guys my trust because you tell us, but we got to talk to each other. We need to figure out what can we do to help you And then we all need to come together and go, hey, I don't know what y'all are doing, but it's better over here. Come join us.
If we all join together,
yeah,
we can help each other out and we can make the grand scheme of things better for each other. It doesn't have to be
right. A fight. And the children and your grandkids and everybody else. That's a world I'll bring kids into.
Yep. And when we see these type of things happen, when we see these events happen, like with Dwayne Wright, George Floyd, and Philando Castile, Ahmaud Arbery, all these different people, and there's so many other names I could bring up. We see these things happen. We hold accountability to those people that did this.
Yes.
We don't try to make excuses for them. We hold accountability for those people. And that's where we keep it. That's where it needs to be. Accountability is all we need. And if we all are there, it'll stop happening.
Oh, yeah. Immediately.
When it happens, you make an example of this person.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
It's over.
It's over. It won't happen again.
Well, because they're too scared. That's why they want us divided. Mm-hmm. We're a lot easier to control if we're divided. If we're joined together, that's a lot more. That just got you. You just raised the level of the game that we are playing to a whole new level that they're not ready to deal with yet.
Right.
So they have to. They at that point they have to give us what we want.
We're getting there though.
we're getting there though
because we have these podcasts like mine. We have these podcasts like yours that bring to light these things. And no matter what people think, if they're on a lower scale of things or whatever the case may be, we got people listening.
Yeah.
We got people saying, "Oh my God, like I didn't think of it like that." And all you need is a couple people. Like the Bible says, the faith of a mustard seed. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
We just need a cup. We sprinkle here, people there, people here, people there, people there. It's going to change.
It's going to change.
And the change is coming about. But
it's coming.
We just need
quick.
The people. We need the naysayers. If you are a naysayer, quiet. Just stay over there and have your opinion and sit down and eat your peanut butter sandwich. Like go over there and do that. But let us, let us be out here and say what we need to say. Let us speak and let us say what we need to say without. Because everything they said about Colin Kaepernick and his movement has came back. It has been debunked.
He changed the NFL forever.
Oh, for sure. I'm not watching if I want the athletes to shut up.
We don't
dribble the ball or catch the ball. But their platform is so huge that when you say I'm not playing because of what you're doing, and I affect the people that are billionaires and that 1%. Oh, now you have to do something. Now I'm going to put Black Lives Matter on every basketball court. Now we're going to have Black Lives Matter t-shirts. Now we're going to have it in Walmart. We're going to have it wherever, in Target, in Publix, wherever we need to get it out. We're going to have commercials speaking on Black Lives Matter, because at the end of the day, when that consumer says, I'm not going to shop there because you accept this, now we have to do something because it affects my pockets.
Yeah, exactly. So we have to affect
so
their
pockets.
So
it's different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We have to. We have no choice. And that's what it all comes down to. Affect their pockets. Like they did that back in the day with Rosa Parks.
Yeah.
We're not riding your bus.
Yeah.
You don't let us sit up there. We're not going to ride the bus. All right. Hey, look, we're going to change the rules. Everybody can sit where they want to sit.
Yeah.
Because they're not riding the bus. They're not riding the bus. And it affects money in their pocket.
Yeah.
Now we're going to. We can learn from every situation that happens in the past because history repeats itself.
I love it.
That's all we have to do.
That's why it's exciting for me. I love history.
Mm-hmm. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
It is going
to
happen.
It has to. It has to. But we have to keep pushing. We have to keep pushing and keep going and listening to each other.
Yes. Listen. Oh my gosh. That's just the biggest thing. Like I tell people, don't talk. Just let me say what I need to say. Yeah. And then you can answer when I'm done. Like, let me get it off. You know what I mean? Like, I know you have your opinions, but let me say what I have to say.
Yeah.
And then we can both put our opinions there. We can come to a common middle ground.
I think it's a Winnie the Pooh quote. And it says something like, I like that, the quote. And because it says something like, the problem with today is that people are not listening to hear, they're listening to respond.
Oof, that is a true quote. Like Winnie the Pooh said that?
I think so. Yeah.
Goodness.
I know.
Wow, that's wow. Like, but that's the truth. Like
yeah.
A lot of people they don't even hear what you say to them. It goes in one ear out the other. They're just so ready to tell you what they want to say.
Well, that's one of the reasons.
That makes so much sense.
Right? That's one of the reasons why I wanted to do a podcast, because I do, it's really like stream of consciousness and I just need to get it out. And so that's why I started podcasting, was because it was like, I just need to get it out and then I'm going to like talk to other people and basically like get feedback, kind of a thing. Cause
oh, I think that's why we all go into podcasting.
Lives in, it can't just live in my head anymore. Like I need to get it. It's too much.
Get it out there and get different feedback on it. Like, I love your podcast so much because you have so many, like, I think I listened to the one where you talk about comedy. Oh. I think I've never heard anyone say they don't like Will Ferrell. I was like, what? You're like Will Ferrell? Like, I've never heard that in my life. But, you know, yeah, there's people out here that don't like Will Ferrell. Like,
right. We do exist.
they are out there. She does not like Anchorman. Oh my gosh.
You I don't think I've saying? Ever but, even seen it.
Wow. You know what I'm saying? And there are those people out here, but see, just being able to get on that and I say, oh my God, you don't like Will Ferrell, you don't like Anchorman, you don't know comedy, you're da, 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 da. Like, that's not what it should be. It's just be, oh wow, okay, I get it. You know, that's not your cup of tea, you know?
Right.
And that's the way that it should be in all aspects of life. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, and that's what we're trying to get people to see. And I think that's where a lot of people are trying to get, and of course, there are those clout chasers out there that will just use the movement to get whatever they're trying to do,
right,
on a bigger scale, and we understand those people. We see those people. We ignore those people, you know, because we get that those people are out there. But we have to make sure that we can, you know, separate the fake from what is real.
Yeah.
And once we do that, we will all be on the same scale. We'll all make things happen, and the government or whatever the case may be will have no choice but to change what they do. No choice.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they will. Okay, so I have one more question.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I have a long list of questions. We didn't get it. It doesn't matter. It's an excuse for you to come back.
Of course. Please.
So I have heard it described that like, so like therapy and like you do a segment in your podcast. It's like right at the end. I forget what you call it, but it's basically it's like
therapy session confessions.
Yeah, therapy session confessions. And your whole, can you tell everybody a little bit about what that is? Because I want to ask you about it.
So with therapy session confessions, especially in the Black community, one thing about Black people, we hold things, we harbor things. We don't, especially as a Black man, we are taught to, you don't express your emotions. You don't show fear.
Mm-hmm.
You don't show sadness. You don't show any of that stuff. You are supposed to be hard. You're supposed to understand that nothing is given to you, that everything you get, you work hard for.
Right.
And if you can't get it out the mud, you know, you get out the mud. That's all we know. And the same for Black women. They are taught that you are an independent woman. You are this, you are that. And everything you get it on your own. You don't need a man. You don't need anyone to do anything for you.
Well,
you
know what I'm saying? To be honest, that's, again, another point just, for you guys that we don't have.
like, that's just what. That's what's embedded from us from the beginning, because what the media or what TV will show you is that every Black man is raised without a father and every Black woman is raised without a father, or there's no Black fathers in the family, but there are Black fathers in our family.
Right.
That's just what the media will show you.
Right.
And that's what we will allow ourselves to think because of the movies, because of what people have instilled in us or whatever the case may be. So what we do on Therapy Session Confessions is, we ask tough questions that black people don't ask each other, and it can get emotional in that thing, man. Like,
it's so great. I love it.
I mean, we argue, we go there, like we do a lot of things, because these are not things that that typically we ask each other.
Right.
And when we ask each other these things, we get it all out there on the table, and I'll take it home and I'll take it back to my own. I'll take it back. And I'm just like, wow, I guess, you know, when they tell me certain things, they give me feedback, like, wow, I didn't feel like I was like that. Like, one thing one of my buddies told me on the podcast was, hey man, I can't come to you with anything because you don't want anyone to come to you when they're sad. And I was like, well, I'm not one you can come to when you're sad. Like, I had to take that. And I'm like, okay,
right,
I get it. You know what I'm saying? So that's what we do on there. And that's what Therapy Session Confessions is, where we just get it all out there, because we don't do that in the African-American community.
Yeah, because I think it was my dad who described it to me one time as, so like therapy and like feelings, and like talking about your feelings and like, you know, which is essentially what therapy is. mm-hmm. and any sort of mental health, anything, whether that's getting medication or any of that, my dad always used to describe it for specifically like the Black community, as there being a wall. So not only do you have to like get up the courage to like make the appointment. So like what we have to do is we have to get up the courage to like make the appointment. We have to buy into this, all this other stuff, blah, 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 blah. So, but you know, they have to do all of that, but not only do they have to do all of that, but there's the wall in between you and doing all of that and then getting the help that you need. That's how it feels. And so my dad always described it as like trying to get somebody over that wall is one of the hardest things to get somebody to do, because you have to break that wall apart. You have you have to show, even in therapy, you have to show this person that that wall is not there anymore, that this, we have broken this wall down and you were strong enough to do it and it's okay now.
In the African-American community.
But do you feel like that's true? Do you feel like, okay, so my dad described it. Okay.
Yeah. That's so true, because especially in our community, we're taught, a lot of us are growing up in church. Mm-hmm. And in church, you don't need therapy. You give it all to God. I'm cool with that. Yes.
Right.
Absolutely. I pray at night to God and I talk to God all the time. But sometimes you just need to get it out to somebody.
Right.
And you need somebody to give you like God gives you feedback through other ways of divine things that you'll never understand. But sometimes you just need somebody to just tell you.
Yeah.
You know, hey, this is what you're doing and you need to stop.
Right.
This
right.
is how you are. Right. You have this and you need to stop doing this, because people don't, you can't just say this is who I am and people have to deal with it and accept it. No. You need to stop being like that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So it takes people doing that for you, because and I'm not just going to say Black people, but everyone, we all have some kind of wall, some kind of barrier that we need broke down, and we need somebody to help us break that wall or that barrier down. I had a situation, right? So I decided to go into right wing Twitter, right?
Don't ask me why I did it.
Oh my gosh. One of the craziest decisions I've ever did, right? I just decided to get on Twitter, and it was during all the Trump stuff. And
I decided to
get on there and just argue with people. Like, oh my God, it turned into some great. But what happened in the midst of me doing that, a gentleman tweeted me or responded to something I said. And he said, I thought Trump wasn't your president. And I said, I live in America. Trump is my president.
Right.
I would never denounce him as a president because I live in America. So Trump is my president. He said, wow. I didn't realize I was dealing with somebody who's actually civil and understands, you know, what's going on. And I said, hey, man, look, that's just, and me and this guy became like good friends on Twitter. Like, you know, look, you feel this way, I feel this way. But at the end of the day, hey, I'm not dumb. I get it. Like, come on, dude. Like, hey, you feel this way, I feel this way. But we don't have to be enemies because of that.
Right.
We don't have to hate each other because of, you have your thoughts and beliefs, I have my thoughts and beliefs, and we can just leave it at that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It does not have to turn into something evil. At the end of the day, we're all after the same thing. We all want prosperity. We all want a good life. And we all want something better for our children. At the end of the day, we all have those same principles. Yeah. And if we can all reach that and understand that we all can have that.
Right. That needs to be like the new American dream. If we're going to bring the American dream back, everybody wants to bring the American dream back. If we're bringing it back, then it needs to be, then we need to like write what that is. And the new American dream needs to be exactly what you just said. That's what I feel like.
No more, no less.
Right. Put that on a t-shirt.
Put it on a t-shirt. Like, all right, it doesn't have to be me versus you. We could be on the same team and have different opinions. You like Pepsi, I like Coke, that's okay.
Do you it's like not Pepsi? A fight.
I do not. I'm a Coke man.
Perfect. Yeah. Good.
But guess what? My
we can still be friends.
My dad's side of the family worked for Coke and my mom's side of the family worked for Pepsi. So.
Really? Your dad? Wait, dad worked for the Coca-Cola? Like where?
He has family members that, like my uncle, his brother worked for Coke. And my mom.
Where for
Coke? In Atlanta. He worked in their headquarters. Yeah, he was a big time person in their headquarters. I was young, so I don't understand what his job was at the time. But we used to get a lot of things from Coke because he worked for
Coke.
Oh,
yeah. Like, well, I just asked because my grandfather worked for the Coca-Cola bottling company in Alexandria. Okay. So right. That's so, why I was just wondering.
So you're pro Coke.
Yeah, so, yeah, we're pro Coke. Yeah, we're a Coke family. Yeah, my mom, but oddly enough, my mom's sister likes Pepsi. Don't right. She's like
my grandma.
Ugh.
Yep, my grandmother on my mom's side would say, "Go get me a Pepsi," and it's like, oh, yeah. So when I go to Boston, it's like, "Go get me a Pepsi," and I'm drinking Pepsi when I'm in Boston. When I come back home, I'm drinking Coke. So
yeah,
like, I really don't care which one I drink, but I do prefer Coke.
Yeah, they're both okay.
Right?
Yeah,
right.
They're both.
Yeah, they're the same. They both could charge a battery in a car. So
yeah,
or clean a bag, whatever case may be.
Yeah,
but clean a toilet. You know, right? Exactly. We shouldn't drink it, but
probably not.
I don't know.
I mean, but it started with them putting cocaine in it. So I feel like anything that began with cocaine in the recipe, we might need to reconsider.
Anything that can make you just feel like you need it.
Yeah.
but with all that, like, if we all can have different opinions on things and be okay. We can all like different sports teams and be okay. Doesn't have to turn into a fight or anything.
Like, those things to me are like fun things, like you know, my husband is like a Dallas Cowboys fan, I'm a Cubs fan, so we're different, so you know, like, that's a good difference. It's like fun competition. There's not really any, you know,
no malice,
nothing real like stake,
right, that's the way it should be. It should just be all fun. It shouldn't be anything that turns into a big fight or an argument. Like, we're okay here. You know what I'm saying? We're okay here. And that's just what it is.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm going to have to bring you back on because I had so much fun with this. Thank you so much.
And I need to get you
on
mine.
Yes, absolutely.
We got to plan something because I told the other two hosts of my podcast that I was doing this. Like, oh my God, like, I love a podcast. So because I put them on it. And I appreciate you putting me in the podcast group that you got me in on your Twitter page and all that. Like, this is just amazing. I appreciate you so much. Thank you for having the conversation. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. No.
Thank you for inviting me on. Like,
love to be on your podcast. And anybody that you know that wants to come on, I mean, the more the merrier. Join. Let's go.
Right,
let's do this.
This is what we should do as podcasters, is like, you know, support, you know.
Yeah, no. I mean, for sure. I'd love to have you or anybody else on. That'd be so great.
Yes, absolutely.
Go ahead and could you email me like your links and stuff so I can drop them in the description?
I will definitely do that.
Go ahead and shout out all your stuff.
Okay, definitely, man. Y'all listen to us on Talm About It Podcast, TALM About It Podcast. Y'all hit us, y'all listen to us. Follow me on Optimus Pod 22 on Twitter. Please make as you can tell, I'm a huge Transformers fan. So please make sure you hit me up on there, Brett Sky Potter. I love all that stuff. So we're all over the place in our podcast. And thank you so much to the Manic Weirdo Podcast, Pixie Weirdo Podcast. We do appreciate you so much, Abigail. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure.
So much. I had so much fun.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
This
bye.
Is great. All right, girl. Bye.
Thanks so much, you guys, for listening. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I had so much fun. We didn't get to as many of the questions as I thought we would, but it's okay because I really enjoyed just where the conversation naturally went. That was really fun. He will be back. So that was so much fun. Thank you, Brett. You know, follow all the things. Twitter at MP Weirdo Podcast. Instagram, the_main_weirdo1. Pinterest, the_main_weirdo21. All the things, get in your shout outs, email manicpixieweirdo@protonmail.com, get in all those shout outs. And as always, be kind and stay weird, guys.